Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Culture Heritage Fund. Helping you discover the Twin Cities, it is Radio K's Real College Podcast, online and on the air. My name is Matthew Curtis, and this week, we're communicating. You may be hearing this on the radio, a medium that has led the way in widespread communications for 100 years, and strongly continues to do so. Of course, this is a podcast, so you may also be hearing it somewhere on the internet, which has allowed us to mutually communicate and connect in ways never before imagined. These technologies bring us together for the sake of exchanging information, and that's exactly what we're talking about tonight. Patrick Sharkey tunes into the world of podcasting, and I uncover the veil behind public relations in the 21st century. We also hear the word on the street with Max Fuller and the weekly release spotlight with Zach Simon. And it all starts right now on the Real College Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Real College Podcast. My name is Matthew Curtis, and today we're talking about communication and the various mediums that we are engaging in the 21st century. I'm joined, of course, by
Patrick Sharkey,
Jackie Ranzetti,
and let's just kind of take it from here.
Yeah, so Matt, you did this story on public relations and kind of how it's a growing field. Could you tell us more about like why you wanted to look into this?
Yeah, of course, Jackie. I mean, unlike these two people over here, I do not do professional journalism. I'm an imposter. I do strategic communication. And basically what that is basically public relations and advertising. I kind of expanded into that. So I studied different things with these guys, and we're very much engaged in kind of public relations and how that affects different industries and how it's become like a very formidable way of marketing. And basically what public relations means is like it's an earned form of marketing, unlike advertising, where you pay for space and you pay for example, like, you know, a TV spot, whereas public relations, you kind of like provide your information and like allow the public or media to kind of take on it and kind of receive it as it is. So it's definitely interesting, and we're, you know, in the age of social media, it's become even bigger than it ever has been. Brands can engage with consumers and vice versa in a way that hasn't been seen before, because like in the past, we were looking at one-way communication. So that would be like a brand making a television commercial and then the audience seeing it and not being able to respond to it. However, now in the age of Twitter and Facebook, you know, the brands can actually communicate with the audience itself. For example, answering questions or simply just like liking or favoriting or retweeting anything that the brand does. So it allows the both the producer and the consumer of the media to be kind of more engaged with that. So it's definitely an interesting time in the age of advertising and marketing. And public relations has taken a huge role in that.
Because it's like a two-way street, right? I mean, all of a sudden, consumers are part of the conversation, and brands can respond much more quickly and more fluidly, I assume.
Absolutely, yeah. And so much goes into marketing on social media now. Like, every brand is asking, should I get a Facebook, should I get a Twitter? And sometimes the answer is no, and sometimes the answer is yes. And the voice in which that brand can carry can either make or break the brand. They'll be followed by millennials. And the thing about millennials is, like, obviously the biggest market, they are spending the most money. But the problem is with millennials is that they've grown up with television, they've grown up with the internet, and they have a very acute sense of inauthenticity. And the reason why public relations is so important is because these millennials really like to see transparency in the marketing. So they don't want to be kind of taken for a ride, I suppose. They want to be told what's going on, the facts, and it's up to them if they want to engage and purchase your product. So in the age of social media, it's really important to have a very clear voice and be very honest, because that's what the market wants. Okay, does that sound good?
Yeah. Let's listen to your story now.
Okay, well, here's my story.
Whether you like it or not, Black Friday is a big deal. Last year, over 130 million Americans flocked to the nearest mall to spend on average $380. And when you multiply 380 by 130 million, that comes to a lot of cash. The day of deals is getting earlier and bigger every year, and it's on the brink of a full-blown epidemic.
Grab it, Rebecca, grab it!
Okay, perhaps that was a little much, but fear not, everyone, because Washington-based outdoor and sporting good retailer REI came to save us from ourselves.
This morning, American consumers are learning a major retailer won't take their money on one of the biggest shopping days of the year.
Instead of running from store to store this Black Friday, REI wants its customers to run outdoors. And it seems like the company is putting its money where its mouth is.
Well, there is a movement to get people out of the stores on this Black Friday so they can enjoy outdoor activities. It's called Opt Outside.
Yes, REI closed its doors on Black Friday, the biggest shopping day of the year, at a potential risk of losing big seasonal revenue. On paper, this decision makes no sense. But that is the very essence of it.
We started thinking about how do we be authentic as an outdoor company on Thanksgiving and or the day after Thanksgiving, and really came to the conclusion that for us, encouraging people to get outside was maybe one of the most authentic things we could do.
The Opt Outside campaign earned REI widespread media coverage and brand engagement, and elevated REI above every other big-name brand in the minds of consumers. They positioned themselves as a company not concerned with the drama and stress of seasonal shopping, but a brand focused on exploration and adventure. What they lose in potential retail dollars, they gain in brand awareness and brand equity. Priceless commodities that brands strive to gain. This is the world of modern-day public relations. PR itself may be old news. It began rearing its head at the start of the 20th century, but the way in which it's communicated is changing by the day. I spoke to Heidi Bobier, an account supervisor for international PR agency Weber Shandwick, about how a little thing called social media has affected the industry.
I think a better question is how hasn't social media affected the industry? A lot of my day-to-day, you know, I've been working in PR for about 8 years now, completely different today than it was when I first started. When I first started in the industry, we were just finding out about Twitter, just getting used to it, using it as an earned media pitch tool. And now we have, you know, campaigns built around Twitter, which is really exciting. So I think what social media allows us to do is get more creative in the way that we're able to reach our target audience. So it's much more expansive, the options that we have. It's not just, oh, let's use Facebook. It's how could you use Facebook and multiple tactics within that. So really all it does is it just gives us more, you know, potential avenues that we can then build programs around.
Social media channels have paved the way for a new means of interaction between the consumer and the producer, switching marketing from a one-way communication system to a two-way. Here's Bobier.
One-way communication is very similar to traditional advertising, where it's we bought a billboard so that people can see it. You know, you can talk back to the billboard, but that wouldn't be very productive. Whereas two-way communication is very much so facilitated by social media. You put your Facebook ad out there, and then you can receive comments. You're getting direct feedback in the moment.
Through this immediate feedback and the ability to hear conversations about any topic, brands like REI have a greater sense of what the audience thinks about, for example, the consumerism of Black Friday, and then can brainstorm ways to capitalize on that. More often than not, these social media campaigns are targeted towards millennials. There are 80 million of them in the US alone, and they represent about a fourth of the entire population, with $200 billion in annual buying power. But they're incredibly informed consumers. They've grown up with advertising their entire lives, and they know in an instant when they're being marketed to and when to tune out. So how is a brand supposed to relate to this skeptical and sought-after demographic? Bobier chimes in.
I think social media has given new generations more of an expectation of transparency. We're in a really interesting time that we're starting to pass that tipping point of valuing realness, intimacy, unfiltered moments, if you will, over something that's, you know, more edited and more polished. So thinking especially about corporate communications, where we have whole teams built out to make sure that the CEO looks as buttoned up as possible, have that strong leadership presence. But really, especially looking at Gen Z, the value is more on, I want to know who authentically this person is. I want to see not always that perfectly scripted person. I want to know who they are.
I'm Diana. I'm a student at the U, studying strategic communications, and I'm a photographer.
I tracked down one of these so-called millennials to see if Heidi Bobier's theory on authenticity resonated. Here's Diana Albrecht.
And a lot of the brands that I do follow and love on social media are those local, like, handcrafted brands. And I guess I just like them because they really take pride in what they do, and you know that they're handcrafted and made to last.
So can you say that the authenticity is the thing that's kind of driving you towards these brands?
Oh, definitely. And I think it takes a lot for consumers to feel that authenticity and like personal relationship, especially through social media sometimes. But I definitely think like the brands that I follow on social media, the more personal they are and the more I can connect with the story, the more I'm going to feel connected with that brand.
The medium of public relations may have changed from newsreels to Twitter feeds, but the purpose remains the same: to serve as an honest and relatable stream of information that hopes to win over the minds of its viewers. And as the demand for transparency continues to reign and the buyers remain weary, brands will continue the unending struggle to make consumers buy into what they're selling. It's a real shame that selling out isn't cool. This whole thing would be way easier. But anyway, this is Matthew Curtis with the Real College Podcast.
Yo, what up? It's your boy Max Fuller, aka Max Keel O'Neill, aka the Maxlenium Falcon, and I'm here to bring you another edition of Word on the Street. That's right, Radio K is out here on the streets like a bum's feet, and I'm here to give you all the dope shows this week. Ooh, that rhymed. That was kind of slick. Speaking of rhyming, you can catch Vince Staples at the Fine Line Cafe this Sunday. Now, Vince is one of the dopest MCs to come out as of recently. His mastery of the English language is second to none, man. Let me tell you, you would be hard-pressed to find somebody that raps better than Vince. And he's going to be here in the city to perform songs off his new album, Summertime 06. He's going to be at the Fine Line Cafe at 6 p.m. In the meantime, let me play you a song off his new album entitled Summertime. This could be forever, baby. This could be forever, baby. This could be forever, baby. This could be forever, maybe. Do you like the sunshine? Do you like the snow? Do you want to talk about it and be alone? I think that you should know that this could be forever, baby. Now on Monday you can head on over to First Ave and go check out the band Deer Hunter. Deer Hunter is a super popular band with all the hipster white people around here in Minnesota. They're coming out of Atlanta, Georgia, and they're going to be playing some new tracks off their album Fading Frontier. They're going to be at First Ave Monday, December 14th at 7 p.m. To get you pumped up for the concert, check out this track from Deer Hunter called Snake Skin. Now on Tuesday, you can mosey on down to the Turf Club for an evening with Eric Koskinen. Eric Koskinen and his regular band are going to be there on Tuesday performing songs off their new album, Eric Koskinen Live at the Real Phonic Radio Hour. He's been recording songs for this album for the last 4 years, just to give it to y'all. So head on down to the Turf Club. Eric Koskinen is doing a short residency there for the month. So if you miss him this Tuesday, you can always catch him next Tuesday. It should be a good old-fashioned hoedown, performing some of that country music that y'all like. Here's a song off his new album called Will You Feel My Love.
Feel my love.
Wednesday, you can waltz through the doors of the 7th Street entry to go and check out Bell Witch. Bell Witch is a Seattle-based metal band that's been around since 2010 that just dropped a new album, Four Phantoms, that's structured around four epic pieces about funerals and death. So that sounds slightly scary and very awesome. So you can head over to the 7th Street entry to go check them out Wednesday, December 16th at 7:30. To set the mood for the concert, here's a track off Bell Witch's album called Suffocation, A Drowning to Somniloquy, The Distance of Forever. And finally, start your weekend off early at the Fitzgerald Theater with the multi-talented Joanna Newsom. She plays the harp, she plays the keyboard, she sings, she does it all, and she's going to be at the Fitzgerald Theater this Thursday, December 17th at 7 p.m., performing songs off her new album, Divers. I'm going to leave y'all with the title track to her new album, Divers. This has been The Word on the Street. I'm your boy, Max Fuller. Peace out, y'all.
So we're back on the Real College Podcast. My name is Matthew Curtis.
I'm Patrick Cherky.
I'm Jackie Ranzetti.
And we're talking about communication today and all things associated with that. And, of course, I did a story. You might have heard of it just now. And then we're going to talk about Patrick's story right now. Jackie, you want to take the reins again? I think you did a great job with my interview.
So, Patrick, so you did a story about podcasts, mm-hmm. which is interesting because you're doing it for a podcast. Yeah. So, I mean, what's the deal here? So, like,
it seems like cheating.
It is kind of cheating. I don't know. I've always really liked podcasts.
I hope so.
It's a cool medium. And I think that, I mean, podcast listenership is up 2% from last year, but that doesn't sound like a lot, but that's millions of people. So it's becoming more popular. Obviously, last year there was the whole Serial phenomenon. So that helped a lot.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so, and I kind of get into the story a little bit, but basically podcasting has been around since like the 80s or in some form. And then Apple included a podcast directory in iTunes. And again, I get into this in the story. But in 2004, it's kind of unknown still before that. But then 2014, Serial, which is like a kind of a different take on podcasting, came out last year. It was the first podcast the fastest podcast to reach 5 million downloads, according to Apple. Just basically made the medium pretty popular, or at least more popular than it had been in the past. Got mainstream media attention, so it really helped the medium a lot. And now it's really, really growing. There's a nice business forming behind it, and it's a good little market.
I'm curious, either in your reporting or just in your own opinion, did you find anything about like why people personally like podcasts? Like what really draws them to them?
I think a couple things. So I think the first thing is people like to listen to or watch things on their own time. You know, you look at like the culture around DVR and TiVo and that kind of thing. People aren't able to listen to live broadcast nearly as much as they used to. And so that's kind of the same thought behind podcasting, is you're able to download things and then listen to them when you want to. So I think that's a big part of it. People really like that there are niche shows and that there are very specific shows about certain, like, very specific topics. And so kind of going off what you're saying, if I can relate to this unique topic, I kind of feel like it's being made just for me. And I think that's why people really like listening to these podcasts. Like, I talked to John Moe, who has a podcast about Adventure Time. You know, and there's still millions of people who watch Adventure Time, but the value in a niche show is that you can just attract that specific audience. You don't have to set up like, okay, here's what Adventure Time is. Here's Finn. Here's who Jake is. You know, you don't have to explain that because the audience already knows it. They downloaded that because they know it about Adventure Time already. So then you can talk about, you know, you can get more in depth, and I think people really like that.
At the same time, it's cool how, like, pretty much anyone can just decide to do a podcast now. Like, we learn a lot in class, I feel like, about how, like, almost anyone can be a journalist. Like, yeah. They can just decide to vlog, and now you can also just decide to podcast.
Right. You know, I kind of compared it to, like, the music industry. Yes, the music industry is a pretty oversaturated market, but you're still getting, I mean, the cream will rise to the top, at least in my opinion, and especially, like, and the guys I talked to, they agreed. So I think it's good, and I think if you put yourself out there, the nice thing about podcasting is you're on the same level playing field. You know, you're not, you can be on like a podcast network and that might help reach certain audiences, but as long as it's well made and it's interesting and has a unique take, I think that you have the same potential to reach somebody as, you know, someone who's maybe an ex-broadcast, you know, AM/FM guy. So I think there's enough potential there that anyone can get involved in it, and assuming you do it well and get the right audience, you can kind of take off.
We'll now hear Patrick's story on podcasting.
Thanks.
I've never really listened to a whole lot of radio. My first car in high school was a sexy champagne-colored Honda CR-V. It was 2006, and I had insisted on immediately installing a third-party deck on my dash, one that had an auxiliary input which would allow me to plug in my iPod so I could play my Sad Guy collection of Taking Back Sunday and Jimmy Eat World, among other Sad Guy tunes. But I did occasionally yearn for something other than the melancholy. At some point, I came across this thing called a podcast, and I downloaded an episode of the most popular podcast in iTunes. It was called This American Life, which was for a long time, and probably still is, the gateway drug for most podcast listeners. Podcasts have been the main source of entertainment in my car ever since. But before we go any further, I'd like to give you a brief history on podcasting. First of all, what is it? Well, you're listening to one right now. That's right. In case you're unaware, the Real College Podcast is, in fact, a podcast. And it's available in iTunes and any other podcatching software that you choose. Okay, so podcasting in some form has been around since the 1980s, yet the term podcasting itself wasn't used until the early 2000s, and most folks really had no idea how to access them. But in 2004, Apple included a podcast directory built directly within iTunes, which helped launch a new wave of podcast consumers and creators. And while the format of podcasting stayed relatively in the background for many years, last year there was a breakthrough. And that breakthrough came in the form of a hit podcast named Serial. And the numbers behind Serial are really encouraging. As of December 23rd, 2014, episodes of Serial had been downloaded 40 million times. And according to Apple, Serial was the fastest podcast ever to reach 5 million downloads. Okay, so now you're up to speed. Podcast creators say that the appeal of podcasting is that it allows its creators the ability to make a show about anything they want. People can make a show about their hobbies and interests, and assuming it's well made, it's interesting and well researched, there's more than likely an audience that will find it. John Moe, who's a producer, writer, and host of many great and popular podcasts, just recently started the second season of his podcast, Conversation Parade. It's a podcast centered around the hit animated show from Cartoon Network called Adventure Time.
Who wants to play video games?
BMO!
What's on the menu, BMO?
I've created a new game called Conversation Parade.
You know, I floated it to my boss at the time as an idea for something to try that was intentionally narrow. You know, I think there's a lot of shows out there that want to be pretty broad. And I said, well, what if we just go the other way? What if we delight the portion of the audience? And there's, you know, tens of millions of people watching this show, so it's not all that small of an audience. What if we just try to make the best show possible for just this group of people?
Podcasting provides the ability to create a niche show and still attract a passionate listener base. John says that this provides many advantages over podcasting's terrestrial counterpart.
That's a convenience that you have and an opportunity you have in podcasting that you don't have in broadcasting. You know, if you're doing a radio show, you need to appeal to the person sort of spinning by on the radio dial. And if they land on you, you've got, 10 seconds to grab their attention and keep them. Whereas with a podcast, they've chosen to download what you have. And so you're already at a great advantage.
But if podcasting is the future of audio broadcast, there has to be a business behind the freedom to produce what you want. There's still a need to make a living, right? So I talk with Sean Bernard and Scott O'Malley, the founders of the Alive and Social Podcast Network based here in Minneapolis, and they explain that, much like traditional radio, podcasting relies on the use of advertising to help make a profit. However, they feel they're less restricted in the type of advertising that they're allowed to engage in.
The average radio talk radio station plays between 18 and 24 different ad units in an hour. We max ours out at 8. And we really don't consider our advertisers as outsiders. It's kind of like a small town mm-hmm. would treat an advertiser, that they're part of the community. They're part of what we do. They sponsor and support what we do. So in some ways, like, you know, maybe The Current or NPR would treat something, but we're allowed to endorse. They're not allowed to endorse these clients. And we really try to look at endorsement situations as much as we can.
While advertising appears to be the main source of income for many podcasts, podcasting is still a very new market. This has led some producers to explore other potential ways to help pay for production. Here's John Moe.
I think there's something to be said, too, for direct audience fundraising. So if you listen to this, help pay for it. And in my experience, people are eager to do that. And I think that's where you get a real advantage with a narrow podcast, where, you know, a lot of the people who are listening to the Conversation Parade are passionate about Adventure Time, and they've become passionate about Conversation Parade. And so if you get people who are passionate about the thing you're doing, you know, they'll spend money. I think there's potential in that direct fundraising model as well as the advertising model. I mean, I don't want to say we're making it up as we go along, but we're all experimenting as we go along.
The podcast medium continues to grow, and the podcast community, both creators and consumers, are working to figure out the best possible way to make it all happen. And here at the Real College Podcast, I think we're just happy to be a small part of it. So, you know, help us out. Subscribe to us on iTunes and tell your friends. For Radio K and the Real College Podcast, I'm Patrick Sharkey.
And the butterflies and bees, we can wander through the forest and do so.
And that concludes this week's Real College Podcast. Thank you to Patrick Sharkey, Jackie Renzetti, Max Fuller, and Zach Simon for contributing to this week's show. Our producers are Aaron Bolton, Max Fuller, Patrick Sharkey, and Jackie Renzetti. You can find us on RadioK.org, PRX, and iTunes, and on Sundays at 6 p.m. on Radio K. Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Culture Heritage Fund, and thank you for listening.